And we are, as a people, inherently and historically
wake up.
Opposed to secret societies, the secret oaths, and the secret proceedings.
The show that asks questions about why we don't ask questions.
What the hell is going on?
This is Conspiracy Queries with Alan Park. Welcome to Conspiracy Queries with Alan Park. I'm Alan Park. These are Conspiracy Queries. Today, we have a whistleblower with us. That's a great thing to have if you've got a conspiracy show as a whistleblower. His name is Stu Webb. He's been a whistleblower for a long time. He has a friend with him. He was also a whistleblower. His name is Chip Tatum. That's a nickname, actually. It's Gene. But anyway, those guys are coming on shortly. And I just want to get this out of the way. One of the people in our country of Canada has tried to, he's had to apologize for making a joke about hockey players, the Russian hockey players in the Olympics losing. And so the folks in the Ukraine might want to be on the lookout for them because they lost the hockey. I admit it's a bad joke, but I also realize he should not have to apologize for making a joke. Hey, you know what? Let's leave that stuff behind and go to our interview. With me on the line, I have Stu Webb, who runs the website stuweb.com. And he also has a website that he's actively involved with called Veterans Today. And Stu is on the line with us, and he is also with Gene Tatum. And Gene Tatum is not physically with Stu at the moment, but we do have them on the same line. Will technology and its wonders never cease? Gentlemen, welcome today to Conspiracy Queries. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having us.
Well, I'd like to start off with Stu. I had been reading much of your articles. In particular, I'm fascinated with your laying out of the Bush family, if you will, going back many, many years. But specifically, I read an article about George Bush Sr.'s cocaine use. Now, this might sound like old news to people, and before you start thinking that's the case, there was a lot of criminality involved back in those cocaine George Bush Sr. snorting days. And you gentlemen have a great knowledge of that criminality, and I guess I'm concerned about it because there's a rumbling afoot that the Republican seeking a nomination to become the president from Florida is yet another Bush. Yes, Jeb Bush is apparently possibly getting into the mix, and this is of great concern to me and people that think that the Bush family is a criminal cabal finally laid low, and now this guy has thrown his hat in the ring. Guys, what are we going to do about this?
Well, I think I'll take it for just a moment. I've put up on my website, and of course, of Veterans Today, and Gene is also a columnist on Veterans Today as well, and has his own website, chiptatum.com. But, you know, I put up a video and audio of Darlene Novinger, who was hired by the FBI to infiltrate the Smap Brothers because she grew up in the same neighborhood with them, and she did as an adult.
Sorry, the Who Brothers? Who did you say?
Darlene Novinger.
Right, but who?
She's
the
now
Who,
dead.
The Who Brothers.
Her home was anthrax in 1994. Her entire home was tore down by the EPA of Pennsylvania, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Later, she died of cancer from the anthrax attack. There were 28 of us got hit with anthrax in the mid-90s. I was one of them, and 12 of us survived. But she survived until 2002 when she died of tumors and so forth. Cancer. But Darlene had been hired to infiltrate the Smap Brothers, of which was the Jeb Bush Jamaican drug connection. And she did. And she happened to be in the car as one of the Smap Brothers delivered an ounce of cocaine to then Vice President George Herbert Walker Bush. Went inside. She was invited to go inside to the Vice President's house, but she didn't want to have her face on camera, afraid that they may notice that she was associated with FBI, so she didn't. She waited in the car, but he took it in, and she filed a report. Her bosses kept telling her not to file the report. Well, she went ahead anyway, and she filed the report, and the next day, everyone inside the Vice President's house was fired, where Bush was trying to accuse everybody else, when in fact he was the one that was the recipient. Now, I've heard over the years that Bush uses heroin. I've heard that he drinks his fifth of Jack Daniels or Jack Black a day and so forth. I mean, this guy's out of control. But you have a real player here, an Iran-Contra player, a top CI whistleblower, Gene Tatum on with us, that met in Jupiter Island, met with the Bushes many times. His boss was George Herbert Walker Bush at Ollie North. And with that said, we'll let Gene answer that question. Gene, Jim Tatum.
The question is, how bad is bad? Is that basically what we're getting at?
Well, my question was, with this, what I consider to be a crime family run amok with no payment yet so far that I know of towards society, and that's the Bush crime family, all right? That's how I feel about it. And now we've got this other goober down in Florida apparently heating up the election hustings, and I just think that there are so many dumb people that they would just go into a voting booth, see the name Bush on the ballot or whatever they redesigned because people can't seem to understand simple ballots, and then they'll see the name Bush and go, yeah, I've done heard of that guy before. I'm going to vote for him. And then we'll just have another Bush in the White House, and it'll be the same thing with, you know, the security companies that the other Bush brother, what was it, Marvin or one of the seven dwarfs.
Neil.
Anyway, yeah, Neil. So I'm just concerned that we're going to have another damn Bush in the White House. That's what I don't want to hear. Do you guys think that's a possibility? And if it is, let's get some more dirty laundry out there so it doesn't even happen by accident.
On the Bush criminality side, let me tell you a story.
All right.
And then everyone can make their own decision about this. Most of you have probably heard of a man named Barry Seal. Well, in 1984... 83, 84, and 85, I was stationed in Honduras. We've all heard of the Iran-Contra affair. We were running medevac helicopters because of Ebola neck, not allowing offensive assistance to the Contras. So we were posing as medevac helicopters and medevac teams. We would fly arms and intelligence personnel posing as medical personnel into the Contra camps, and we'd leave with drugs, large white coolers of drugs. Those drugs would be delivered to C-130s, C-141s, landing in various airfields on the Caribbean coast and on the Pacific coast. We were always met with civilian aircraft, and one of those civilian aircraft pilots' name was Barry Seal. I got to know Barry Seal as we dropped off many, many containers to him. And in time, we were visited by Don Gregg from the Bush clan and others. They were there to investigate the loss of $100 million in proceeds. They couldn't find out where it went.
Where had it come from in the first place? Where was the source of this $100 million?
All drug money.
Okay.
During the conversation, we had a sat phone. They called the then vice president, spoke with him, and after speaking with him, they decided that monies were being skimmed off either from the people in Arkansas by Barry or by Noriega, and the conversation went very, very explicit. Well, if it's Barry, Jeb can take care of that.
And Barry is
Barry Seal was assassinated outside of a halfway house a couple years later.
Yeah, well, there seems to be a pretty robust death list surrounding a lot of the recent presidents. Clinton had a death list. I think Hillary Clinton has a death list. How probable are these to the average person? I mean, we might have some listeners today coming on the show the first time, and you're saying all of these horrible things about the former president. How can we back this up?
All presidents have a kill list. That's just a fact. Back in the 1990s, I produced one of their orders, executive orders. That was to kill a man named Enrique Bermudez, a Nicaraguan Contra leader that just went off the deep end. He threatened the corporation, the enterprise, with exposing them, so they had him assassinated. they all have it. And you see it today. Back then, no one would believe it. Now you see it. You know, Osama bin Laden, all these guys are on those same type of lists. They're lists produced by the National Security Council and written up through executive order. They're kept secret for the general public not to read, but they are there.
That's amazing. So are we in any kind of danger of sliding further into a more criminal leadership, supposedly, from the White House if we get another Bush in there? Am I just concerned about this for no reason?
I would say a continuing criminal leadership, not a more.
Oh, continuing, yeah, because technically speaking, Obama, now the president, is not a Bush. But is that right. What you mean? Okay.
But the crimes continue, even though they're not in the White House. Their underlings are there. They're people that they've infiltrated and placed in high-ranking places, very important places, are still there.
Yeah, those systems
I might add to that is these current bankers that are dying, these are kill teams. And right. I've been informed recently about that by a high-level government official that would be in the know, say that Daddy Bush has his kill teams out there, and they're exterminating the bankers because there are a possibility of being a witness because of some things that are happening. And
we would normally go for the they would look and see who the weak links were and then send our teams in. Yes.
All right. So is that what's happening with the bankers that seem to be dropping almost weekly or regularly, like it's part of the weather report now? Another banker plunges to his death from Canary Wharf in London. Is that what's going on? They're being taken out one at a time?
That's what I've been told.
And because they're about to say something?
So I'd take that to the bank.
Okay. So is this a preventative measure so that those guys don't say something that other people think they might say? Why? Why are they being killed?
Well, for two reasons. You get a double action out of it. First of all, they're the weak link. They're the ones that they think may end up testifying. The weakest of the group. And the second is the others see it and make it just ensures that they're not going to talk.
Right. You know, I might add about this banking situation, because I'm getting ready to do a report on this. It's going to be quite extensive, probably three or four parts when it's said and done. Might take another week or two yet to get it done. But the group out of Denver, which was the Bushes, and this APEC stooge, Melman and Mizell, that are directors of APEC, formed APEC, which is the espionage worldwide, and control in the United States, that is the Congress, the Senate, and so forth, and they are partners with Bush. They're one of what they call the Council of 13, the Illuminati 12 that have taken over the economies. We're estimating, $100 trillion worth of artificial mortgages, and they were bundling them up through asset investors out of Denver, Colorado. I even have my SEC whistleblower complaint in, and the whole bit, because I helped push them to bank bailout with Interpol. Matter of fact, I'm not afraid to say it was French intelligence and some others, German intelligence, and the French got hit bad with their bond house up there, and so they were pretty ticked off. But they were one of the ones that had bought a tremendous amount of these bonds, and they were mortgage-backed security bonds. And what MDC had done, that was a parent company of Silverado, where Neil Bush was once director, that collapsed, the illegal CI drug bank. They were taking the MDC, and they were buying mortgages around the country. First, they were taking the Richmond American homes and Ponderosa homes and Wood Brothers homes, which are some of the largest in the U.S. They were creating mortgages on houses in Southern California, Nevada, Las Vegas, and Phoenix, Arizona, that they weren't building houses. And they were bundling them up so they would put two-thirds of the bundle would be legitimate mortgages and one-third would be artificial mortgages, fake securities, commit fraud. And they would sell them into the bond market. And they had many, many companies involved. They controlled AIG, American Insurance General. They controlled Citicorp. They had Goldman Sachs. They had Deutsche Bank. They had HSBC Bank, et cetera, all involved in this daisy chain, Bank of America. And so they were doing this fraud, and they ran out of mortgages. They got too hot in saying, we built these houses. And so they were still buying mortgages from lenders all across the country, mortgage bankers. So they started taking their mortgages, and they started duplicating their mortgages, and they duplicated them up to 9 times over. So one-third of all mortgages sold out of asset investors, which used to be traded on the New York Stock Exchange until late 2007 when they got caught and they knew it. One-third of everything coming out of there and bundled up were artificial mortgages, artificial-backed securities. And so then they turned around and they used their other stooges. Now, this was Larry Mizell, an APEC director, the head of MDC Holdings, the parent company in Denver, that was the company over Silverado, et cetera. Their other director, Norman Brownstein, which Gene can, Chip Tatum can touch on in a moment, it was Daddy Bush's attorney when he was a CIA director, when it was CIA, six CIA counsel, they call it. He hides the money through trusts, foreign trusts. Hillary Clinton was sitting at the Rose Law Firm, as an example, creating this foreign trust to hide their identity and to keep from paying U.S. income tax by being a foreign trust. He controls those trusts. Those trusts control thousands upon thousands of corporations. Mm. He has shown up in almost every bankruptcy there is. They call him the 101st Senator because he is an APEC director up there with the money, and 9 out of 10 laws written in the U.S. right now, he's the one that writes them.
Can we just get his name again and political affiliation?
Norman Philip Brownstein.
What's his name, sorry?
He's Norman Philip Brownstein.
Okay.
And he was on the board of directors of MDC at one time before I put the heat on him with what was called the Keating Five. It was actually the MDC 200 and the Silverado scandal and the Denver Airport and Keating Five, Denver Airport, and the HUD scandal. I'd caused those four congressional investigations back to back in 1989 through 1991. And so that gave me the federal whistleblower status. But during that period of time, or later on, we find that Norman Brownstein was sitting up at Deutsche Bank and HSCB Bank, actually working out of Denver, but as an official director, vice president of both banks, selling these derivatives, these mortgage-backed security derivatives that they were bundling up. And now what's interesting about this is that, you know, when the bank bailout comes along, George W. bails his partners out, which he was partners with them in all kinds of crimes, including HUD Reinsurance. Over $200 million is missing out of HUD Reinsurance involving U.S. Bank and U.S. Mortgage Corp, that he was involved in those frauds. They took the money, and they never delivered the money to the government. So, you know, the guy still can be nailed for that, I believe. But Norman Brownstein and the whole group, the APEC group, have come back since bank bailout, and they have taken 12.5 million homes from people illegally, people that were paying their mortgages down the street to XYZ Mortgage Company. They're coming in, and they're saying, oh, no, we own your mortgage because Bank of America and many of the banks got stuck with these bad mortgages during bank bailout, and they're cooking their books right now, saying that they're, you know, that these are non-performing assets, showing them as assets, but not non-performing.
It sure sounds like a lot of chicanery going on from the inside with APAC.
And the real wild part about this, Alan, is that they've taken 12.5 million homes from people that were legitimately paying their mortgages. Now what they're doing...
Hang on, before we get to what they're doing now, we have to do...
They're writing mortgages up to $30 and $80 million mortgages, bundles and bundles and bundles of mortgages. They're writing right now on many of the houses that they don't even own and some of them that they duplicated. And they're writing these mortgages, then they're stealing the people's houses.
Okay, we'll detail who they are and how they're doing this right after this message. So what you're saying is that 12 million, and they're virtually undetected and unknown according to the mainstream of most Americans. When you're talking about APAC, I mean, most people don't even know what APAC is.
American-Israeli Pact. It's espionage in the United States. I'll cite you an example, and I think I've said it on the mortgages, but I'll cite you an example. One more thing on the mortgages. There was a guy I met in Denver, and I met with a former investigator at the U.S. Attorney's Office. He says, they sat down with me, and he had quit, and he explained what had happened. He says, you know, the U.S. attorney during Silverado wouldn't do anything. Mike Norton, he says he was covering it all up, Stu. And he says, here I'm the investigator for their office. He says the FBI was covering it up. Joe Johnson and all these people running the FBI at the time, he says they were all covering it up. He says, I couldn't figure out what the hell was going on. So he says, I decided to start looking at some of the Silverado files. And he says, I found this guy. He says in one, he had borrowed over $150 million with the loans of Silverado that FDIC had insured, and the federal government picked it up. So he says, I went out and picked the guy up. He says, I drug him down to the U.S. Attorney's office. Of course, the guy's sitting there in front of me. I don't want to mention their names. He's sitting there right in front of me having lunch with me explaining the story. After 8 hours of interrogation, figuring out what had actually happened, all this guy had done is gone and bought a house from Remax Central, which they sold in one of Richmond American's homes, MDC subsidiary company, and Remax was one of Millman's companies, and all he did was bought a house. Well, what had happened is, over there at Silverado, Neil and his boys took his Social Security number, his signature, and started duplicating that and making loans that were non-existent. So
wow.
They could bust the FDIC and break the FDIC. I mean, there were billions upon billions of dollars worth of loans that were never reported like that going on. It's the same thing. I have two examples going to be in the story. One's $30 million they just repoed on a girl in Denver, Colorado. Just took her house overnight. Didn't even know her house was up on the auction block. Actually, her husband had died, young girl, and her home was paid for. She goes to an estate attorney over it, and all of a sudden she's got these attorneys that are being fraudsters, playing the game, being forced into the game. I got another example of a lady that her daughter's home was taken from her, $80 million worth of loans run up on $150,000 houses, get you. Then I got a talk show host here in America that he paid off his mortgage because they came in and tried to play that game with him, and his wife took their estate or her inheritance and from her parents and paid off their house. Well, for the past 5 years, they've had three different companies come in there and claim that they own their mortgage, and they don't own their mortgage, and he's actually suing them for fraud now. But, you know, they take and say, well, we bought the mortgage from Bank of America, and we're Citadel Corp. Now, with that said, I think Gene, Chip Tatum, can add some things about Norman Brownstein and some things that went on in the past when he was in Colorado. Go ahead, Gene.
Let's do that. But just before we do that, Gene, let me just, again, I got what AIPAC was from you, Stu, but I'm sure there are a lot of listeners that absolutely have no idea. It's the American Israeli, what is the rest of it? And what are they supposed
to? The American Israeli Pact is what it is, and it's espionage.
Okay,
and
but what AIPAC, is it supposed to do? I mean, we're obviously told.
They're supposed to be a lobbyist group is what they pretend to be, but I'll cite you an example. Between AIPAC, the Anti-Defamation League, which I might add, Abe Foxman just took off for Israel, left his $500,000 a year job. I find that real suspicious because they're being investigated for espionage. So the Simon Wiesenthal Center, the cell in Denver, Colorado, and B'nai B'rith. What's interesting is you will find all these cat and gators from MDC Holdings. They're all on the board of directors of every one of those organizations. Phil Wynn was on the board of directors of ADL. He's a director of MDC. He was a HUD scamster, convicted. I got a conviction on him. He never served a day in jail. They sealed the case for 10 years, and Bill Clinton gives him a presidential pardon.
Yeah, he was pardoned. It was like $60 million worth of thievery or something.
There were 500,000 units stolen out of HUD over a 15 to 20-year period of time that they actually just took the money. They were getting 8 out of 10 HUD dollars. Now, Phil Wynn was convicted, never served a day in jail. The case was sealed by a crooked judge in Denver, and he gets a presidential pardon by Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton's attorney, by the way, James M. Lyons, is on the board of directors of MDC, or used to be, and was at the time. You know, Bill Clinton, to give you an example how deep the crime syndicate goes, Bill Clinton, when he was in trouble over his impeachment over lying to the grand jury, he had supposedly error and omission insurance. And who paid off Paula Jones and all the other ones that he was having sex with, they had sued Bill for slander and different stuff? Well, it was called Chubb Securities, Chubb Indemnity Company, Chubb Insurance Company out of Denver, Colorado. And who sits on the board of directors of that? Norman Brownstein, Leonard Moman, and Daddy Bush's attorney. And Leonard Moman is the godfather. He's the one that took over for Meyer Lansky years ago. And Meyer Lansky was the big mob don, had to testify for Congress and so on and so forth about the Jewish mob in America. Now, I'll just add 2 minutes worth. Last year in September, I'm not privy to read these reports, but I have friends that tell me these things. And back in shortly after this had happened, there was a 16 intelligence agency report. That 16 intelligence agency around the U.S. combined their report, and it got set on the president's desk sometime in the first part of October, Barack Obama's desk. And it said the AIPAC, the ADL, Simon Wiesenthal Center, B'nai B'rith, Leonard Melman, Larry Mizell, Norman Brownstein, Bill Hillary Clinton, Jeb Bush, Neil Bush, Marvin Bush, George W. Bush, George Herbert Walker Bush, Bibi Netanyahu of Israel, that's all tied up in this stuff, was involved in the Jonathan Pollard spy ring that set us back in our nuclear codes and nuclear capabilities in the Middle East and Russia for better than 10 to 15 years and still might be harmed by it, that he's in prison for. And everybody's always wanting to get him out.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, AIPAC, everybody else. AIPAC is always trying to get him out of there, right?
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, it said further in the report, it said that these people have been involved in the highest levels of espionage against the United States of America. They've committed treason and sedition. They have robbed and looted the country in every financial scandal since the early 1980s. They've been involved in the HUD scandal. They've been involved in savings loan, junk bond, daisy chain, every security fraud that could be imaginable. They have stolen people's pension funds, robbed and looted the United States government, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, broke them. They were the bank bailout scamsters, and that they did the attack on the Oklahoma City bombing in 1995 with the Oklahoma City Murray building, and that they did the attack on America on the day of 9/11. Even Michael Harari, that was involved, and Gene knows who he is, that's now the head of the Mossad, Israeli Mossad, admitted to U.S. intelligence 2 weeks after the bombing that he was involved with it, and they all were. But it also said that they supplied Israel, through Israel, stolen nuclear material out of Rocky Flats nuclear arsenal, 2,000 pounds of plutonium or uranium, whichever it was, plutonium I think it was, that was missing, that they had supplied Israel, and they sold that all over the world, which gave Korea now a nuclear bomb, a nuclear capability with a missile that can hit the United States or Canada, Northern America. So this is what they've done. Well, there's no Justice Department. It's always been a cover-up of every attorney general up there since 1981 that I'm aware of. It goes from Ed Meese all the way forward to the current attorney general, Eric Holder. And Eric Holder, you have to ask yourself, him and Lenny Brewer that left about a year ago over the mortgage scandal that he's after Frontline did so many great pieces on him, and he got so much heat, he decided to bail on Eric Holder. But Eric Holder and Lenny Brewer were the attorneys of record for Mark Rich. Well, Mark Rich was the fugitive from America that Bill Clinton gave a presidential pardon to 2 days before he left office. And Mark Rich was a massive security fraudster. I mean, he stole a lot of money. I couldn't even put the number on it. I mean, there's been all kinds of reports on this. But they were his personal attorneys before they became attorney general and assistant attorney general. And then you have to look at the inspector general's office just for a moment. I think that Gene may be able to comment on Lee Reddick. Lee Reddick was the cover-up meister, the inspector general of the U.S. Department of Justice Public Integrity Section, which is the watchdog over the entire Justice Department. This is the head cop that's supposed to arrest people when they're out of control and are criminals. Well, he was a cover-up meister for 20 or 30 years for him. And William Richard Scruggs, the assistant attorney general of the United States, at one time, had arrest warrants out of Costa Rica and so forth, which I've got arrest warrants showing that these people were involved. Ollie North, which was Gene's boss, and others have, and John Hall, a whole bunch of them are up on my site and on Veterans Today. But these were the cover-up meisters, William Richard Scruggs, that was the U.S. attorney out of Miami. You have Lee Reddick. And after they get out of office here a few years back, you've got a guy by the name of David Mann. I can nail him. He's the top inspector general now. And David Mann laundered $1.5 million of Leonard Milman and Larry Mizell's bribe money through a company called M&L Business Machines in Denver, Colorado, of which Milman paid an $80 million fine in 1997. Mizell paid $5 million. Brownstein paid $5 million. Frederico Pena, former mayor of Denver, had taken a bribe to vote for the Denver airport, $2.5 million from Phil Wynn. He actually had to resign his position as Department of Energy at the time. His statement was to the public, "I'm resigning because I'm my family. I need to take care of my family." No, it was that he was under indictment. And a reporter with the Rocky Mountain News before, they bought that newspaper out in Denver, went up and asked him, "Is it true that you're under indictment?" Because I told him to go ask him that, and he did. He says, "Is it true that you're under indictment? Well, who are you?" And he got all bent out of shape because it was done in secret. There was a secret grand jury that happened. There were good guys inside of our government to try to stop them, and they got all paid these huge fines. Milton paid $80 million. Nobody went to jail for bribing public officials. One of the officials who were bribed that they paid off on, who never paid any fine, was David Mann. And he laundered his money through Tom Berg, a Boulder attorney. $1.5 million, and he is now the Inspector General of the U.S. Department of Justice. And that case, by the way, was later sealed under national security by Bill Clinton. Now, have you ever heard anybody pay an $80 million fine not going to jail for bribing public officials?
No, they do live in a separate world, absolutely. Let me ask you about this. You talked about Colorado. Now, there's an article on, everybody paying attention, StuWeb.com, and this article is just incredible. What an amazing claim. Now, I've heard for many years about strange things going on in and around and underneath the Denver airport, and you've got a fascinating article here called Illuminati Council of 13, Human Sacrifice, Denver, Colorado, December 22nd. Now, let's spend a little bit of time there, because I know what you're talking about as far as money is concerned. I mean, it just seems like the people doing this stuff are clearly criminals or insane or some combination. And then we have to bring into the equation this this dark satanic aspect. So can you put a little light on that for us? And I don't mean that as a pun, but I guess I kind of do.
I exposed the Denver airport and caused those congressional hearings in 1990 and 91 on that. It was in that time frame. And I worked with a former admiral named Richard Young, Dick Young. And he was an attorney, and he had come to me through Pete Bruton, that wrote the book, The Mafia, CIA, and Bush, that I contributed to, and Hal Martin, the Iran-Contra whistleblower, and all this. And we had Margie Sloan. Her name appears. Mine doesn't, neither does Al's. But they had come to me and said, or through a congressional investigator, and that's how I started hooking up with them, about rumors about Silverado. And then Dick gets hooked up to me. Well, him and I did an extensive investigation of every land track where the Denver airport was to go. And, of course, the old airport that ended up in their hands for residential construction. But we went over that thing with a fine-tuned comb. There was so much fraud involved, not only the land flips prior where they were making $5 million in 1 year off of appraisals or being shoved through the roof, but the construction and the construction fraud. And, you know, they even poured that baggage system on wet earth. It had rained that 4th of July weekend, and they went in there, and Hensel Phelps poured those pillars in there, and they were off, and they poured it on bentonite. The whole airport was built on bentonite. Well, it was kind of interesting. The bentonite, when it gets wet, it expands and contracts, et cetera. And so, therefore, when they poured that, they made a lot of mistakes. So when they actually had the baggage system up and operating, $200 million system, it didn't work. It was just a waste of taxpayers' money. It was throwing baggage off. So everybody's got all this bull out here, all these conspiratorial spin doctors, and all their stuff about the Denver airport. I mean, here's what they did to the Denver airport that I found out later in 1994, and from a construction superintendent that actually worked there. And if you go to youtube.com/StuWeb, StuWeb 1, you will see the Denver airport secret underground facility. I put him on TV 49 or whatever it was in Denver, Colorado, an English, Spanish, English-speaking station. Because the other stations had basically cut me off. I had worked with many of them, Dave Minshall with TV7, all that. So I went to them and allowed them to do the interview. in secret. So you have a construction superintendent there in the video with a tape measure, and they've got his voice muted, et cetera, and you've got a guy asking him about what was built.
And
well, they
built
a FEMA transfer station.
We're going to find out. I have to stop you here. We'll find out what was built as soon as we come back, because this airport figures huge in what goes on in America. We'll be right back. And we're back on Conspiracy Queries with Alan Park. We're speaking about the Denver airport. And now I'm with Chip right now. Is that right? Or is it Stu?
You're still talking to Stu.
Okay,
but
so
Chip's,
Stu.
Chip's with us here. But real quick, and then I'll turn the mic over to Chip. But
sure.
What they built is they built about 5 buildings of and a runway, by the way. They put a huge runway out there. And matter of fact, on that runway, TV7, Dave Minshall, that flew over their airport, they just poured that runway before they poured any other runway. And he says, calls me up and says, Stu, what's going on with this runway out here 2.5 miles east of the airport? I said, I don't know. So he reports on it that night. Next day, he flies over with the helicopter. It's covered up with dirt. So he goes out there kicking around dirt, and they found out the runway was still there. And they're saying, oh, we tore it up. We poured it in the wrong spot. It wasn't. Well, it was for the FEMA transport station. So if they ever decide to declare martial law and open up the FEMA camps, that's where a lot of people will be temporarily housed, like they are in El Reno, Oklahoma, now Oklahoma City Airport. You'll see a big star out there, U.S. Marshals. That's a prison where they transport prisoners overnight, park you overnight or a few days, and then move you someplace else. And that's what that is. But there's also what was called, it also deals with national security, and it deals with, Air Force and other things that are additional buildings to the south that I don't want to even touch on, okay? But that's what I had exposed was the FEMA part as well. So that video's up there, self-explanatory. Now, you mentioned about their nefarious stuff. They do human sacrifices, these 12 men do, at the old Navari across from the Brown Palace Hotel. It's an old casino whorehouse downtown Denver owned by Millman, and Ann Schultz has his headquarters in there in the building. But we nailed them this year.
Yeah, you
and
said
there
was,
website,
there was a kidnapping.
I don't want to burn up all the time. I want Gene to be able to have some time here.
Absolutely.
On the right column of my website at the top, there's a picture of the old Navari and a picture, and it says top videos for the year. There's a video in there of an Oklahoma TV station catching them, a guy that had kidnapped a kid saying he was taking it to the Illuminati for its sacrifice. Well, we had an APB out on all the hospitals, Amber Alert. I had friends do that this year, and we nailed them. And they didn't have a child out there because they couldn't kidnap one out of the hospital, so they used their secondary goons, which was a felon, had a arrest warrants for him and everything. He goes and grabs an 18-year-old out of a Walmart, and he even said that he was taking it to the Illuminati sacrifice, and this is June the 17th, which would have given him time to get it up there on the night of the 20th at midnight when they start the party into June the 21st.
Stu, let me ask you, there's so much of this going on. I mean, there's the huge famous article about the Reagan prostitution ring back in 79-80, that famous headline in the paper. I'm sure Gene knows about it. And this kind of dark, satanic, sex, crazy, spiritual, or not spiritual, but evil stuff that's going on. First of all, people don't believe this is going on. So you can't stop something that most people don't even believe is happening. This is why, to me, I think it just keeps on going and going because nobody believes it.
And Alan, it does. I just wrote a massive story on it a couple weeks ago. It's called APEC child whorehouses in Washington. It's in the middle column of my website, stuweb.com. There's a block at the top, and then there's 3 columns below it. It's in that middle column that'll run you over to, you just click on it and it'll take you right to the link.
Sure.
But it's APEC, okay? And Jack Abramoff ran, child sex rings in Washington, D.C. It's got all the stories of what went on during the Reagan. It's got the Washington Times story in there. They broke about 6 stories. There's one in there. It's got the Finder's documents in it. It's got the stuff regarding Jack Abramoff. I got witnesses to what went on and the whole bit. I even knew Rusty Nelson, that was the photographer in there, and how they tried to kill him that was in there in the Bush blackmail of congressmen and senators.
Is this the same Jack Abramoff who wound up doing time?
Yes.
And apparently, Osama bin Laden or some people of that nature were on his boat shortly before 9/11. Is that true?
I don't know about that, but Jack Abramoff I do know about because I worked with Carol Lamb, the U.S. attorney out of San Diego that burned Jack Abramoff and put him in jail. And Dusty Fogle's been put in jail since, and a couple others in regarding contracts, lobbying CIA contracts and defense contracts, etc. I helped put Abramoff in jail, and I'm proud of what I did. He should have been in there for 100 years for what he did. And, you know, Carol Lamb got fired over that.
Just remind people, now that we know we're talking about the same Jack Off.
The lobbyist,
Abramoff,
Jack
Abramoff.
And he answered, he was an APEC lobbyist. He answered directly to Norman Brownstein and Larry Mizell out of Denver, Colorado, which both are APEC directors.
Right.
Now, Gene, you want to chime in on some of this?
No, you're doing fine.
Gene's going to keep his head down. That's great. Stu, how do you know all of this stuff and still get to live your life? I mean, I would imagine with the breadth of knowledge that you have, the research ability, I know you're a whistleblower and you have a protective status of some sort, but still, how are you?
There's no protection. You have to protect yourself.
Absolutely.
I believe in God. I believe in Christ. I get on my hands and knees every day. He says in the Bible in Psalms 92, 93, if you ask, you'll be given. You know, they've tried to murder me so many times. I mean, I got a broken neck still to today from a rover three times on a concrete barrier at 60 miles an hour on the freeway where they hit me in the left rear. It just flipped. The van just flipped, and I hit the concrete barrier. I mean, since then, they've tried to get me two times. You know, it's just, I mean, I just have to watch my back. I've heard bullets go by my ears. I mean, I've been anthraxed. I mean, why am I still breathing? It must be for some reason. God wants me to keep doing this. So that's the reason I'm doing it. But, you know, I got involved because I married into the crime syndicate. Married a fruitcake daughter that had been abused, child, now adult syndrome, and she tries to murder our kid. And they buy her way out of it. And the whole bit in Dallas, terminate my parental rights, and I got ticked off as a father's how I got involved. And then, you know, I'm thinking after all the years, when she turns 18, I'm still fighting them. I go see her and then find out they got permanent lifetime restraining orders where they gave a second divorce illegal in Denver, Colorado, where a judge signed off on it and said, and they forged my signature or whatever they did up there, and they won't even, they're saying the case is sealed for life, that I gave up my daughter for life and seal case, and that they could change her name from Webb to Millman in exchange for $1.5 million that never happened. Never happened. And I always wondered, why is Leonard Millman trying to offer me, extending the olive branch, they call it, to shut up and go away? This was after Gene Tatum disappears in 97, no longer doing radio shows and making noise. They come along and trying to offer me $7 million in annuities, that a $500,000 a year, they were going to give me a $500,000 cash, $500,000 a year to ensure that I could keep silence, would come new with some insurance company they had. And all this. And I said, oh, is my daughter going to be part of the equation? When are the parental rights that be able to see my child, et cetera? Oh, no, that isn't part of the game. Well, what it was, they were trying to legitimize their illegal orders that they did with that court by saying, look, he's got the money in his pocket. He did take the money. So that's never happened.
Guys, Gene, are you okay?
I'm fine.
Okay.
You know everything from here at Alan and Gene. I mean, we don't have a lot of time.
No, we don't.
He was a real player.
I'm
just a guy that investigated and came across.
Well, let's find out what happened to
him. There's very few in Gene's level I've come across, but it's been less than 10, I'll put it that way.
Okay, well, Gene, let's find out what happened to you in 97. Stu says you went missing, but here I am speaking with you. What happened, and how'd you get back?
I had to leave for the protection of my family. That's what it came down to.
Did you leave the States? You mean you had to leave America?
I left the United States, yes. I went to Central and South America.
Oh, okay.
As the U.S. Marshals, when I decided to come back and turn myself in to straighten out the violation of probation that I was on, the Marshals, the Department of Homeland Security, in trying to find me, said they found me going from Fort Lauderdale to the Bahamas, and then from the Bahamas they couldn't find me. I just disappeared.
Hmm.
But I'd gone down to Venezuela, Colombia, Costa Rica, Panama, Ecuador, started businesses and started my life down there.
And this is after you left your crazy spying life behind in America.
Uh-huh.
Did you feel like you had nothing else to do? Did you feel like you needed to get out of America and go to South America?
Oh, absolutely. I had, to give you an example, on one occasion, two sheriff's deputies came up to my house, and this is what really made me decide it was time to go. They came up to the house, and when you're on federal probation, if you're approached by law officers, you're going to be violated and thrown back in prison. That's just the way it is. So they came up, they knocked on the door, and they said that wanted to talk to me, and then they said, "I need to see your wife." I said, "Well, you know, you don't need to see my wife. You need to talk to me." He said, "Well, sir, we got a call from this phone number from a woman saying that you were beating her." I said, "Oh, is that right? From this number? What number was that?" He gave me my number, and I said, "And what did she say?" He said, "She said she's here, and you're beating her. We need to see your wife." I said, "Well, you can't see my wife. I'm not going to let you see my wife." And they said, "Is there a problem here?" I said, "No, there's no problem here. You can't see my wife." So they pushed their way through, put me up against the wall, walked through the whole house looking for my wife, said, "Where is she? What'd you do with her?" I said, "Well, she's been in Savannah, Georgia, visiting her parents for 2 weeks.
Uh-huh. And how did that go over with the cement head officer who...
Yeah. I might back up the time frame on this, too, because I think it's important. We need to... Gene needs to tell a story on what he did, but this was in 97, and he had made noise for a year and a half. And matter of fact, if you remember, Maxine Waters was yelling and screaming, congressman from California, about the narcotics trafficking by the Bushes and the CIA into California. Well, Gary Webb was writing all these stories. Gene was the source of those stories. Later, Gary made a book, and they killed him over it. They murdered him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Gene, prior to that, had been thrown into jail real quick. I think it was in 1992, after he refused to take the order to neutralize Ross Perot, then presidential candidate Ross Perot.
And when you say neutralize, when you say neutralize, you mean take care of. I mean, you mean take out. I mean, you mean kill.
They just wanted him intimidated. No, they just wanted him out of the election.
Oh, okay.
That's all. Yeah.
Yeah.
Gene refused to follow the orders. That's when they arrested Gene and threw him in jail for how long was it, Gene, on treason charges?
About 3 years before the judge said they couldn't do that.
And then he got out, started making noise with me, and then later he left the country. But prior to this, Gene, give me your background from Vietnam forward. I mean, I'm shutting up totally. It's your mic now.
I'll tell you what, though, guys. I don't know who that was. Someone selling cookies. Listen, we've only got about 4 minutes left on the show, unfortunately, you guys. So, answer that. And then we'll try to wrap this up with a button on it. I want to get a little help for people to try to look out for, you know, signs that they can look out for that these scams, these evil, dark ways really are the pathways of these folks supposedly in power and how we can protect ourselves from that.
Well, I think Stu's probably, because I've been gone so long, he's probably the one to tell people what they can do.
But he said he was going to shut up and let you talk for a while. He said he was going to be quiet and he's going to let you talk.
Real quick, Gene never got to tell a story, really, and that he worked for Ollie North and Daddy Bush and all of them, then vice president, and what he did. I think you ought to bring him back on by yourself.
Done.
And put Gene on for a program, Alan. But people can get involved, in my opinion, by getting involved with the American Defense Party, and which is setting up oversight over these police departments and so forth, AmericanDefenseParty.com, and also RecallPetitions.com, and start recalling all these APEC congressmen and senators in the United States. If they violate their oath of office, everything you need to know is right there on Recall Petitions. If they sign the Patriot Act, the MDAA Act, if they sign for anti-gun, if they sign for help Israel and committing treason, whatever, espionage, it's right there. All you have to do is go file it. Three people have been knocked out of office in Colorado because of this in the past 6 months. But I want to, I just want to tell you listeners, too, that, you know, Alan, you need to put Gene Chip Tatum on and do 2 hours with him. I mean, I burned up this whole time. I brought him on thinking we could get half of the show with him, but you need to put him on because he's the only guy out here that actually worked for the Bushes and the crime syndicate, should we say, at one time and turned against them and is still living and breathing as a witness against them.
Stu, I will do it. Gene, will you come on alone sometime?
I'll be happy to.
And tell us the stories. I would love to hear it, and I know that they're there. And, yeah, I don't have a two-hour show. So, Stu, if you really believe in that, what you can do is write the producers at Sirius XM Radio
hour
and draw 135
hour
Liberty
show
Street.
You have, whatever it is.
Yeah, it's
but,
a one-hour show.
No, you can find Gene's Chip. It's chiptatum.com. He's also a columnist on Veterans Today, and if people want to hear more of his story until you get him on, there's a Welcome Gene Chip Tatum to Veterans Today. There's a couple audios up there that people ought to listen to. I'm only doing this because Gene never really had much time on this program to get his word out, but come to my website, stuweb.com, the left column. There's several other programs that he's done, but Alan, get him on. He's got stories to tell.
I will do that, and we'll have him on shortly. Thanks for coming on yourself, Stu. Once again, everybody's going to be able to check Stu's website. He's got a couple of those, and Gene has one as well. Thanks for coming on, you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to Conspiracy Queries with Alan Park. Please offer comments or complaints by emailing conspiracyqueries@gmail.com or on Twitter at @con_queries or at our website, conspiracyqueries.com. Thanks for listening.